Buichat Hashem Elokeinu melech ha'olam Asher kiddushuni b'mitzvotav v'tzivoni l'hadnik na'echani Tu Hashem Elokeinu melech ha'olam Sheyusu nisim la'voisaini Bayumim u'ayim Bazman
Good evening and happy Hanukkah and a freilich lichtige Hanukkah for everyone, for all the Jewish people. Tonight's class has been sponsored by Anonymous, and this is in honor of Hanukkah. May Hashem bench him with lots of blessings. The CD this week been sponsored by the Tzikman family, and this is in honor of Mrs. Tzikman's birthday, Mrs. Polina Tzikman, and may Hashem give her a lot of happy, healthy years of nachas and joy, and just endless blessings for her and her entire family. Hanukkah, interesting. Hanukkah is one of those holidays that slip by very, very quickly. And before you know it, tonight is already the fifth night. We already lit most of the menorah. And before we blink an eye, the Yom Tov has passed. I think the reason for that is, even though Hanukkah is the longest of the holidays, similar to Sukkot, it's 8 days. We celebrate Sukkot 9 days, but it's a long holiday, from the longer holidays, Hanukkah. Simply the reason it goes by so fast is because it's the weekday holiday. We're involved in our daily activities. We go to work and so forth. So it's unlike the other holidays when we have time to go to shul. And we sit in shul all day, or we come home and we have the festive, the Yom Tov meals, the holiday meals. So we immerse ourselves in the holiness and the significance and the meaning of the holiday. On Hanukkah, being that we're busy doing our daily chores, And all we do is at the end of the day, we light the menorah and say halal in the morning, extra in the davening. So we don't get the chance to allow the holiday to seep into our bones. And it's very possible that the holiday just slips right by us. And that is a big shame. Such a gem of a holiday, a Yom Tov of such great illumination, of such great light, it is so important that we take the time to absorb it, to take it in, to digest it as much as we can. So that's why it's good that we gather here tonight and to talk a little bit about Hanukkah, the significance, the meaning of the holiday. We begin with the name. Hanukkah, the name Hanukkah means dedication. Why is it called dedication? It's because they dedicated the temple. In the time of the Second Temple, when the Greeks came in and they ruled the land, and they violated and they contaminated the Holy Temple, and the service in the temple in the Beis HaMikdash was disrupted for the certain amount of time. So now when the Hashmonaim came in and the Jewish revolt was successful and they managed to expel the Greeks from the land, so they came back into the Beis HaMikdash and they rededicated the temple service. So it says because of this inauguration, of this new beginning, that it's called Hanukkah. Because Hanukkah means a Hanukkah, an inauguration. Now we know that the Torah is not something of the past. And in Judaism, we don't commemorate events, historical events. Judaism is a vibrant religion. We're a people of the present. We're the people of the now. And so when we're celebrating a holiday, it's not a celebration of what happened way back then, but it's about what's occurring at the present moment. So when any holiday comes, the very energy and the very life force that was shining and illuminating and brought about the miracle of the day really reoccurs every year. So it's happening right now as the teaching of the holy Baal Shem Tov. Now, the Baal Shem Tov teaches us in regards to Purim. We say, it's a Mishnah that says, "Akores ha-megillah le-mafreya lo yotza." If someone reads the Megillah, on Purim we read the Megillah, the scroll, the special story of Megillah Esther, the story of Purim. So if you read it backwards, you didn't fulfill your mitzvah. And the Baal Shem Tov says, what does it mean to read it backwards? Sometimes the simple meaning of reading it backwards means you read it in the reverse order. You start from the end of the story, chapter 10, and you go back, 9 and 8 and so forth. So you didn't fulfill the mitzvah. You didn't fulfill your obligation of reading the Megillah. However, the Baal Shem Tov says the deeper meaning of this is that if you're reading the Megillah and you're reading it as if it's a story of the past, as if it's a story that happened a long time ago, and you don't feel that it's happening right now, that this is occurring to your neshama and your soul in the present, you did not celebrate the holiday. You didn't connect to it. It's not what it's all about. So the same is about Hanukkah. The dedication, the Hanukkah, the re-inauguration is taking place now. In what sense is there an inauguration happening in our own lives? We don't have a temple today, but we really do have a temple, because each and every person is a temple. Every single Jew, as it says in Chavakuk, Heichal Hashem Heima, that the Jewish people are called the Heichal of God. They are the palace of God, the home for Hashem, the abode for the Shechina to rest. As it says in the Pasuk, when it speaks about making building a temple, it says, "Va'asuli migdash, make for me a beis hamigdash, v'shachanti besocham, and I will dwell amongst them." And the sages point out, it doesn't say v'shachanti besocho, and I will dwell in it. It says v'shachanti besocham, and I will dwell in them, indicating that God is saying that I want a temple because I want to dwell in each and every one of you, in your heart, in your soul, in your mind, in your life. I want to be present in your life. So we as Jews are the home for Hashem, and our lives are supposed to be, through the Torah and the mitzvahs that we do, Hashem can live within our midst, and within our soul. So just like in the temple of the past, there were the forces of unholiness, there were the elements of darkness, that were seeking to destroy the temple, to contaminate the temple, and to contaminate it, make it impure. So too is with our own neshamas and our own soul, our own private temple. In the present day too, there are forces of darkness, elements of evil in the world, negative forces that have an impact on us. And these are forces that are both on the outside and that are on the inside. On the outside, when we live in the outside world, there's a lot of elements of immorality, a lot of negative aspects that our eyes see and that we hear and we see about by hearing the news and so forth. Just living in outside in the world, going out there, we go out for business, we go out to live our lives, and we encounter, we see all kinds of things that desensitize us to holiness, that bring an impurity into us, that contaminate our neshamas, the holiness of our soul. And that's on the outside. And then there are internal. We have our own private Antiochus. That's our Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination that seeks to pervert us, to destroy our Kedusha, the holiness, the sanctity of our soul. And it awakens and stimulates within us all kinds of negative drives and cravings and unholy feelings and wants and thoughts, sometimes even sinful actions and activities. These are all elements that destroy our Beis HaMikdash. So when it comes to the time of Chanukah is the time of a new beginning. It's a time of dedication, of starting new. We can restructure. We can begin our new Beis HaMikdash, even if it has been wrecked. Even if we look at ourselves and we find ourselves being a spiritual wreck because of all this garbage that has entered into our lives. And even if it's been our own fault, even if we know that we are the ones who did this to ourselves, and even if we've been given chances and chances again and again and again, but we keep on sadly destroying our own Beis HaMikdash. So Chanukah is a time when the very days themselves carry the energy of renewal. They carry the ability to restructure, to start all over again. It's a new Chanukah, a new beginning. It's a time of inauguration. We can begin making ourselves, our lives, into a home for Hashem, into a place where the Divine Presence can reside. Now the word Chanukah, which means dedication, also has a meaning of chinuch. Chinuch means education. Now, the aspect of chinuch, of education, is synonymous with the inauguration. Because education and inauguration, when you're educating a child, what does educating a child mean? It means inaugurating this child. You're inaugurating this child to live a productive life. You're inaugurating and you're setting the child on a path of positive growth, of development, of spiritual development, of moral development, and ethical development. So the aspect of chinuch, of education, is an aspect of inaugurating. It's starting something new, beginning the path, the positive growth and development of the child. In particularly, the main element of education that is called chinuch, that is called inauguration, is the very beginning, the very start, the very beginning of the educational process. When we begin the educational process. Now, in Jewish custom, there is a very beautiful custom. And this is in all communities, it's different. It varies in different communities. But the general gist of it is the same. And that is when we bring the child into cheder, when we bring a child to the teacher for the first time in his life, we make a nice ceremony. It's bringing the child to his Rebbe, to his Malamed, the first time. So the child is wrapped. Again, the customs varies in different communities, but the general idea is we take the child and we wrap him in a talis, and the family comes along, and you come to the classroom, and they bring all kinds of goodie bags and candies and stuff like that. And the child is placed on the teacher's lap, and the teacher begins to read the Aleph Beis and shows them where an Aleph is and where a Beis is. And he coats the Aleph with a little bit of honey. And he gives the child to lick the honey on the letters. and showing the child how sweet the Torah is. That it's sweet and it's delicious and it tastes so good and so forth. And as the child is going and reading the letters, the teachers or the parents, whatever it is, are throwing candies down on the child, those lollipops and chocolates and candies. In some places they say to the child that this is a gift being sent to him from the angel Michael. The Malach Michael from above is throwing him candies and giving him these sweets. And this is not a lie. It's not like the fairy of the tooth that comes to your and gives you the quarter for your tooth that you left under your pillow. We wouldn't be educating our children by telling them lies. And the explanation is we tell our children that the Malach is sending these gifts, because the Malach really is. The Malach is giving this, and the parents are the agents. The Malach Michael is the Malach of the Jewish people. And he, of course, wants Jewish children to be educated in the right and proper way. So he sends special gifts, inaugural gifts, to the child. And it's being delivered through the parents. The parents are the shluchim, the agents, or those that were sent to deliver these gifts from the Malach. So this whole process, and we shower, the main idea is that we're showering the child with extra gifts. Now, why are we doing this? What is the significance of this minna, thing to give the child so many gifts? Now, in the educational process itself, as a child, we know a teacher has to constantly give all kinds of incentives and positive reinforcements to a child. But it's not to the same extreme like we do when we're bringing the child the first time into the cheder. And the difference is because that's only reinforcement. The child has already gotten onto the path of growing, of studying, of learning, and now we only want to enhance the process, to continue it, to smooth it out, to make it easier. So we continue by constantly giving the various different incentives. However, when we're holding at the beginning, in the beginning when we need to jumpstart something new, we have to break the child into a whole new element in his life. Because as a child, till he comes to school for the first time, he's never been pushed, never been no pressure to achieve, to accomplish, just doing whatever the child does, living in a relaxed state. Now it's going to require education, growth, studying and learning is going to require for the child to employ his abilities, his talents, his mental faculties, his emotional faculties, his physical strength to his studies, which takes a lot of effort. In order to make this great change, to effect this change, it needs an extra oomph. You need an extra push to be able to give him that ability to do that. So you need an empowerment. The extra goodies that we're giving this child is the empowerment for the child to make that move. That he should understand and feel that studying is good, it's delightful, it's exciting, and he wants to come to school. Teacher doesn't show him the stick the first day. That's only going to come much later. Now he needs to see this as an exciting, so he has an appetite and a great desire for studying and wants to learn. Now, this physical enhancement or process of giving all these of gifts that we're giving to the child and making it so sweet, really, in truth, it's carrying behind it something on a spiritual level. Because every minhag that we're doing in the practical sense has its equivalent in the spiritual realm. And that is that when we are bringing the child to cheder for the first time to school, to the teacher for the first time, at that very moment, as we are showering him with the physical gifts, there is a tremendous showering of godly vitality and a potent energy that is being imbued in the soul of the child, giving him the strength for all of his growth, his or her growth, as they will grow older and they will develop in their study, in their process in school and so forth, and onward in their life. They're being infused and injected with a spiritual energy at the time when you're bringing him to school. That's the idea of Chanukah, of the chinuch, of the starting, of the beginning of the process. We know that on Chanukah, we read the emphasizing the idea that Chanukah is a time of inauguration. We read we take out the Torah for every day, 8 days consecutively we read, and we read the inaugurational ceremony in the Mishkan. The Mishkan was the first temple. the mini temple that, or the mobile temple that went along with the Jewish people when they were in the desert. So when the Jews made the Mishkan in the beginning, for the first 12 days, there was an inaugurational ceremony. And the priests of the tribes brought sacrifices. Every day another one the princes of the tribes, the heads of the tribes, the Nasi. And every day a different Nasi was commanded that he was the one who would bring these inaugural sacrifices. Now we look at these sacrifices, and these were very lavish gifts. This was completely unproportionate to the other gifts, to the regular sacrifices that were offered in the temple. See, generally in the temple they offer two daily sacrifices, one in the morning and one in the afternoon, two sheep. On Shabbos, on Rosh Chodesh, on other holidays, they ordered a musaf. They added a musaf. Musaf means an addition. You added an extra sacrifice. But the extra sacrifice consisted of a few more animals. On Sukkot, for instance, there were a lot more animals. But on the inauguration, on those 12 days of an inauguration, the princes, when they brought a huge gift of many, many sacrifices, way beyond what is usually given on a regular time. And it also included silver trays and incense and meal offerings, huge, and goblets. All this was offered extra. We usually don't find in the giving of the Beis Hamikdash, in all the sacrifices, there should be such an addition. And the explanation is because it's the Chanukah. We're taking in the Beis Hamikdash, and the altar, the Mizbeach. The Mizbeach is regular, ordinary stones. Ordinary stones. Stones that could have been used in any kind of construction. Construction of a house, construction of a fence, construction of a road. And these stones are suddenly going to serve as the communicator between God and the world. This is the place where heaven and earth are going to touch. This altar is going to be the place where all the ascendants of the Jewish people, that we're reaching out to God, is going up through those sacrifices to Hashem. The godly light coming to the world is going to come through the altar. For ordinary stones to take on such an important role of serving as the communicator between God and the world, we needed something very powerful to initiate it, to start it. And that is why they gave these special gifts, the Chanukas, HaMizbeach, which means to jumpstart, to give that great, powerful, potent injection of life, of godly energy to this otherwise ordinary stones or altar, for it to be able to serve as this great, in its great new post. That's the idea of a Chanukah. Starting something requires a tremendous light, far greater energy, which is usually isn't present. And this is what happened in the time of the Yavanim. Because in the time of story of Hanukkah. Because when the Jewish people came in, and after the Greeks destroyed the temple and contaminated it and ruined and violated the sanctity and the holiness of the Beis HaMikdash, they needed a new start. They couldn't just continue because it was destroyed. So it required a new beginning. So for this, they needed a boost from above. They needed a heavenly illumination way beyond the ordinary transmission of godly light to the temple. And this came to them on Hanukkah. Hanukkah was a time that they accessed such an intense radiance, such intense light from above, that invigorated their souls and invigorated the temple with an added vitality and an added light for them to be able to begin the temple service, to begin all over again. So every year on Hanukkah, in our own lives, we are on Hanukkah given, on these days, this incredible light and effusion from above. Hashem shines into our soul on Hanukkah this inaugurational light, an energy far greater than that which we have access to all of the rest of the year. And this enables us to rededicate even a temple, even if we, as we said earlier, if we look at ourselves and we find ourselves a wreck, even if we find that our temple has been destroyed, we have the ability to start all over again because Hashem imbues us with this great light, dafka an Chanukah, this inauguration light. And going back to the child, when the child comes to the class, as we said earlier, what we are giving to the child is candies, silly gifts, little immature incentives. However, for the child, that's important, because it says, Chanoch lenar al pi darko. Educate a child according to his level, according to where the child is. So you can't come and explain to the child importance of education intellectually, that the child should understand that he should want to come to school. That would go over the child's head. So in order to communicate to the child, you have to give the child something. He has to lick honey. He has to taste the sweetness. But you can't taste the sweetness of wisdom. He's too young to understand the sweetness of wisdom. So he has to understand the sweetness of candy, the sweetness of chocolate, the sweetness of honey. So the Aleph, you know, these are the 22 letters, godly letters. You explain to the child, you know, the wisdom of the Hebrew letters, the endless wisdom. That's the true sweetness of these letters. The child wouldn't understand it. So you coat the letters with honey, and the child licks the honey. Ah, then he knows that the Aleph Beis is sweet. And the same is, but so what really is happening over here is, as we said earlier, God is giving the child, when he's walking to giving to cheder, an infusion that is going to be with him all of his life. An empowerment of spiritual vitality and energy that is going to illuminate the soul of this child and enable him to overcome all the challenges and all the obstacles and all the difficulties that are going to be in his way of development and growth. All this is given to the child at the moment. That's why we're so careful when we take the child and we wrap him in a talis, because we want to make sure that there's only holiness. And we says you should be very careful. The child shouldn't see something, anything impure on the street. Because of the degree of this hamshacha, this tremendous great energy and holiness that's coming down to the neshama, that we don't want to ruin it in any ways. We're so careful with it. But even though it's so holy and so godly, it's being delivered to the child in the form of candies, in a form of sweets. It's these sweets, when the child will eat them and digest them, he is digesting all the spiritual vitality and holiness into his neshama simultaneously as he is digesting these candies and taking them in. Because that's the only thing that can connect to the child. And the same is also on Hanukkah. Hanukkah, God is giving us this great illumination of light. But this illumination of light is coming to invigorate us. It's coming to empower us. So it can't be an abstract holiness that only saintly people, only tzaddikim are able to feel and they're able to touch and they're able to connect to. It's something that that has to be tangible enough for ordinary people. People who need their temple to be rededicated. People whose lives are a wreck. People who have found that all the oil in them, all their energy has been depleted. Has been contaminated. Ordinary people are being given a gift. They're being given an empowerment from above to start their lives all over again. So Hashem gives it to us in a tangible fashion. So on Hanukkah, we're given this great, great gifts from above, this empowerment from above in a manner that we're able to take it and connect to it. That's why it's a minhag that we give Hanukkah geld. People distribute Hanukkah money. Hanukkah geld to the children, to others, to everyone. The idea of giving the Hanukkah geld is because the Hanukkah geld is indicative, and the Hanukkah geld contains within it the gifts from above that God is giving to each and every one of us, the extra dosage of light, of empowerment that we're getting on Hanukkah to bring about a rededication and a new beginning in our life. Now, Hanukkah is the holiday that came to the Jewish people, the last of the holidays. It was given to us, in the time of the Second Temple. So it's the last of the holidays that are celebrated in the Jewish holidays. Now, the indicating that the holiday of Hanukkah is really a yontif that belongs to the future. It belongs to the end of days. It belongs to the dark periods of Galus. And that's why it came to us before we went into the darkness. And as we know that Hanukkah has been serving as a source of inspiration. The flames of the Hanukkah menorah are the flames of hope. They're flames of faith. This is what has been kindled and gave the energy to the Jewish people throughout this very prolonged exile, to be able to strengthen ourselves and to know that as we trudge through the darkness, that soon we will come to the end of the tunnel, and soon we will come to the light. Hanukkah has that power, the power to illuminate and strengthen us, dafke in our darkest moments. We see that in the holiday of Hanukkah, Yom Tov of Hanukkah, when it comes out. Hanukkah is a winter holiday. It comes out smack in the middle of the winter. The winter season is a time that is represented as a time of unholiness. Because the winter is the time when we have very short days and very long nights. Also, it's cold. Coldness and darkness indicate the realm of the other side of unholiness. It's not cold and dark all over the world, but in the part of the world that is similar to the land of Israel. In the land of Israel, this is the time in December when Hanukkah falls out, is the time of the short days and the long nights in the winter season. Now, as we said, the winter, again, darkness and coldness is symbolic of the trademarks of the klipa, of the unholy. Why? Holiness is light. Holiness is warmth. Because holiness is connected to Hashem, and Hashem is the source of life. Life is warmth. Life is luminous. And for that reason, anything that is connected to God is alive, and if it's alive, there is it's warm. The symbol of a living body is a warm body. A dead body is cold. So therefore, the symbol of Kedusha, of holiness, is light and warmth. The unholy is dark and cold. The winter is a time when there's extreme coldness. It's a time of extreme darkness. It's also a period when we see nothing is growing. It's a lifeless, it's a barren period. The winter season is barren, it's empty. It's a stretch where the trees are empty, nothing is growing. We look at the holidays, the Jewish holidays, the biblical holidays, Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot, and those holidays are all in the seasons connected to growth, connected to vegetative growth. We have Pesach, for instance. The Torah connects the Yom Tov of Pesach, Chag HaAviv. It's the Yom Tov of spring. Springtime is the time of renewal, of growing. Shavuos is the Yom Tov of the harvest, Chag HaKotzer. Again, the next stage in the production of food and growth of the vegetation. And then last is Sukkot. Sukkot is the time of the gathering of everything. Why? Because since the holidays are times of godly illumination, holidays are time when Hashem's light is reaching or illuminating the world to a greater degree than other times. It is for that reason that the holidays are in times when the very physical world is expressing growth and development. However, the winter, there are no biblical holidays. Since the winter is a time of when the other side is dominant, when the side of the unholy is then stronger than that's their dominant time. This is their, and for that reason, the winter is a time when we don't have any holidays, the time of darkness. We also know that we have, even to the point that we have one night in the middle of the winter that it's so dark and such concealment that there is a minhag amongst Jewish people that it's a night that we don't study any Torah. It's called Nitelnacht, a night that we don't study Torah, because that's the ultimate of the klipa, ultimate of the negative energy that dominates, that is so powerful in the world during that time. So that's the winter. Hanukkah is so powerful. Hanukkah is the yontif that comes out right in the middle of the winter. Why was Hanukkah, and that's why it only comes to us in the end of days? Because it belongs to the period of Choshech Yechasa Aretz, when darkness is going to cover the world. It belongs to the period of the winter. It belongs to the time when there is a cover-up, a concealment of godly light. And Hanukkah is the antidote. Hanukkah is the ability that even in the darkness we have the ability to illuminate. And we see that that's the whole content of Hanukkah. The whole meaning of the holiday is to illuminate the darkness, to light up the darkness. We know that what do we do on Hanukkah? What's the main mitzvah of Hanukkah? It's lighting a candle. Well, we light a candle. However, the lighting of a candle, now we know that all of Torah mitzvahs is really about illuminating. Because every mitzvah is a candle. Kiner mitzvah v'Torah or mitzvah is called a lamp and Torah is called light. So through a mitzvah and through Torah, we illuminate the world. However, there is a very big difference between the illumination there's something special about the Hanukkah mitzvah. The mitzvah of lighting Hanukkah candles is that over here, the physical mitzvah itself, the very physical act of the mitzvah, is expressing the spiritual element of the mitzvah, and that is to add light. So we're doing something physically that is adding light. However, Hanukkah is not the only mitzvah of lighting a candle. There are other mitzvahs when we're lighting lamps. Shabbos, we light lamps. We light lamps in the menorah, in the Beis HaMikdash. They would light the menorah every day. However, there's a very big difference between the Hanukkah menorah and the menorah that is lit in the Beis HaMikdash and the menorah that we light, the Shabbos candles that we light. See, Shabbos candles we light inside a Jewish home. The Jewish home is a holy home. It's a holy environment. It's because, as we mentioned earlier, a Jew is a place for the divine presence, the Jew himself and his home. A Jewish home is a place where godly words are uttered all the time. It's covered with Jewish books. It has a mezuzah on the door. The first words that are heard in the morning are modani. I thank you. I acknowledge God. Before we go to sleep at night, we say Shema Yisrael. We accept and we surrender to God's to the godly kingdom. So a Jewish home is surrounded completely with mitzvahs, a kosher kitchen and so forth. It's full of generosity and kindness. It's an abode for God. The lighting of the Shabbos candles represent increasing light in a place that is already otherwise holy. It's only that we're adding light. And there's the weekday. In the weekday, the light is diminished. It's the mundane part of the week. And then Shabbos is coming, where light is increasing. That is the reason why Shabbos candles, we light them during the daytime, before it gets dark. Because it's indicating that that it's an luminous time, and during the time of illumination, we're increasing that illumination and adding more light. The same is also with the temple menorah. The menorah that was in the Beis HaMikdash, we lit the menorah indoors, inside the temple. And the temple was a place of holiness. True, the light went out of the temple, but the place where they actually lit it was indoors. And when did we light the menorah and the Beis HaMikdash? We lit it before the sunset. The mitzvah of lighting the menorah had to be done when it was still day. Because the idea of lighting the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash and the lighting of the Shabbos candles are all representing lighting a flame in a place that's already illuminated. Increasing holiness in an holy environment. Hanukkah candles is different. The mitzvah of lighting Hanukkah candles is to light the menorah outdoors. To light the menorah to the street. To light the menorah in the place where the light is going to illuminate into the Rishus HaRabim, into the public domain. And as we know that in the laws of Shabbos, there is a law that there is a place that's called a private domain, Rishus HaYachid, and there is a public domain. And the difference between the private domain, the spiritual difference between a private domain and a public domain is that a private domain is a place where is surrender, the place that recognizes God's sovereignty over the world. It recognizes that that everything belongs to Hashem, L'Hashem Ha'aretz Ha'Melayoi, that the world is God's world. It surrenders to the One, to what's called Yechida Shaloylam, God who is the one power, the superpower of the world, or the only power in the world. Rishus HaRabim represents a place of the multitudes, a place, the outdoors, where everybody goes, where there's all kinds of things, meaning that God's singular power, His sovereignty isn't recognized. That's the street. The idea of the Hanukkah menorah is that we light the menorah, we're out on our doorway, going to the Rishus HaRabim, the place closest to the street. Because the whole idea of Hanukkah menorah is to illuminate the darkness, to reach out into those that are in the street. For that reason, we light the menorah also after it's dark, or at least after the sun sets. The mitzvah of Ner Chanukah, which is kind of strange, because really we should have written it, since we're lighting the menorah as a commemoration of the menorah that they lit in the Beis HaMikdash, we should have lit our menorah similar to the way it was lit in the Beis HaMikdash. Beis HaMikdash, they lit the menorah before dark, so we should also light our menorah before the sun sets. We should light our menorah also before the sun sets. No, but we light the menorah after the sun sets. Because the idea of Chanukah is to illuminate the darkness, to go into a dark place, so that for that reason we're also lighting it on the left side. If we're lighting it by the door, we light it on the left. The mezuzah should be on the right side, and the menorah is on the left side, because we know that the left is the source of all concealment. The right is chesed. Chesed is illumination, kindness, revelation. The left, it represents gevura. Gevura is tzimtzum, contraction and darkness. Chanukah is here to reach into the crevices of darkness, into those places where, into the cracks of darkness, where godly light does not reach ordinarily. And the point of Chanukah is that it has such potent energy, it's so powerful, that it can reach even the darkness, even to the people who are walking in the freezing cold nights of the month of Teves, or the month of Kislev, where you have the longest nights of the year. So people that are out in the cold, they're shivering in the cold. And they're in the dark. So when they see the light of the menorah, that inspires hope. That kindles within them a flame, a fire, a connection to Hashem. The Chanukah menorah is the only thing that can reach Jews that are so far. That's why we see amongst the Jewish people that people celebrate Chanukah more than other holidays. You know, we celebrate people, Jews, those that generally are not too... practicing of Judaism, but nevertheless, there are certain, you know, come Yom Kippur to Shul or Pesach, and then Chanukah. Why Chanukah? I mean, after all, Pesach and Yom Kippur, these are biblical holidays, especially Yom Kippur, the holiest day of the year. Pesach is the foundation of our faith, the very beginning. Why Chanukah? Out of all things, Chanukah was, it's just a rabbinic holiday. It doesn't have the same seriousness of our, so to speak, as the biblical holiday. Nevertheless, Chanukah is celebrated by everyone. And all kinds of explanations that we can give, that maybe it's just a commercial thing because it's the holiday season and people want to have something to celebrate, so they celebrate Chanukah. But this, of course, is superficial. The reason why the Jewish people are awakened to Chanukah is because the light of Chanukah is so powerful and it's so strong that it can touch a soul that is out in the dark. It can reach people, it can reach places that no other holiday, no other illumination can reach as far as Chanukah can reach. Because the neris of Chanukah are meant to illuminate into the dark, into the Rishus HaRabim, to warm up the coldness of the month of the winter, and to illuminate the dark nights of Kislev and Teves. And as it's brought from the Holy Sfas Emes, it says in the Mishnah, we say it on Friday. Some people say it in Peperik Bamem Adlikin on Friday night before Ma'ariv. It says that Shmanim Upsilois, that the oil and wicks She'ein Madlikin Behem B'Shabbos, that you don't light on Shabbos, Madlikin Behem B'Chanukah, that the oil and the wick that you don't light on Shabbos, simply see Shabbos. There's laws of which kind of oil and what kind of wick you're allowed to use for Shabbos candles. There is certain oils and wick that qualify, certain oil and wick that don't qualify. Only a fire that will give a steady, good fire you're allowed to use. A wick that will produce, an oil that will produce a reliable fire. A fire that is wobbly, an oil that is not going to produce such a consistent flame, you can't use because we're afraid that the person might fix it and then you come to violate the Shabbos. That's the simple meaning. However, as the great Tzaddikim said, and I think it's attributed, it's kind of, the Sfas Emes writes, that it means like this. Every single soul, every single person is a candle, is a flame, is a candle, a lamp of God. So we consist of the oil and the wick. So there are oils and there are wick that are not ignited on Shabbos, which means that the holiness of Shabbos doesn't reach them. These people have become so coarsened and so desensitized, so disconnected from their spiritual origins, from their connection to God, that the holiness of Shabbos doesn't faze them, doesn't touch them, doesn't inspire them. But Chanukah is so strong that Chanukah has the ability to permeate even those souls that have become so disconnected. The psila that doesn't ignite, the wick that doesn't ignite from Shabbos, ignites from Hanukkah. Because Hanukkah is so powerful. The strength of Hanukkah, the power of Hanukkah, is connected to this, that Hanukkah is 8 days. And Shabbos is 7 days. When we look in the Beis HaMikdash, in the temple, they lit the menorah. The menorah was also a menorah of 7 lamps. In Hanukkah, we have a menorah of 8 lamps. We don't light every day 8, but in the end of Hanukkah, we light all 8. So the extreme power of our Hanukkah menorah, that it has the ability to illuminate even into the darkness, is connected to this, that it is 8. We know the difference between 7 and 8 is that 7 is a holy number. 7 is holiness. So the seventh day of the week is Shabbos, the holy day. We also know the 7th year is the holy year. And so forth. Many things in the Torah that we find that the number 7 is a special number. Because 7 is indicating Kedusha, it's indicating godliness. However, the holiness of 7 is the holiness within creation, within nature. Shabbos is, well, we're keeping Shabbos, why? Because God created the world in 6 days, and the 7th day He rested. Which means that on Shabbos there was an extra illumination of God. But it was part of the process of creation. So the holiness of Shabbos belongs to the realm of nature. It's God as He has already adjusted His light and limited it to the creation. However, the number 8 is indicating to a supernatural light. 8 is indicating to the miraculous. 8 shows on a power that is limitless, endless. That's why it's connected to the miraculous, that which is beyond. A Jewish baby has his bris milah, the covenant, and he enters into his covenant with God on the 8th day, because our unique covenant and our unique connection to God is a supernatural connection. The Jewish people are a miraculous people. We're connected to a supernatural, to God as He transcends the creation, as He transcends the finite realms of the world. That's connected to the number 8. When Mashiach will come, we know that Mashiach will play on a harp, and the harp is going to have 8 strands, because it's going to be the 8th note. Today we only have 7 notes to music. When Mashiach comes, the transcendental light of God is going to be revealed in the world, and that is going to add the eighth dimension. So Hanukkah is connected to the number 8. 8 is limitless. 8 is infinite. That's why Hanukkah and Dafka Hanukkah has the ability. Doesn't have any barriers. It can go out into the darkness and reach those souls that have become the most disconnected. It can reach the cold nights of Tavis. It can illuminate even those that are freezing out in the cold. Why? Because it's 8, and 8 has no barriers. It goes everywhere. The holiness of Shabbos has, because it's a light, because it's an illumination of nature, that's why it has its natural bounds. It can shine. It can shine in a place that is ready, that is receptive to it. A place that isn't receptive, or there are certain barriers that can stop that light. Hanukkah menorah has no barriers. It breaks, it permeates, it blasts through every barrier, through every wall, and it reaches everywhere because of its great potency, its great intensity that no other light has. But where did we get this menorah? Where did the Jewish people, how do we as finite beings have the ability to illuminate an endless illumination? Where do we get a strength that is beyond limits if we are finite? Where do we have that strength? So the light of the Hanukkah menorah comes from one cruse of oil. It's that one pach shemen. It was a one jug of oil that is the source of all this light. Now, not as we usually think, that the jug of oil that the Jews had, that they found in the Beis HaMikdash, was used up. The miracle was there for 8 days, and then they used up the oil. That oil remains even today, that Pach Shemen. And every year of Hanukkah, a little bit of that potent oil enters into our soul and gives us that ability to illuminate even the darkness, push away any darkness in our life, to melt away the darkness with that potent oil that we have on Hanukkah. The jar of oil that was sealed with the seal of the Kohen Gadol. However, where did they get that oil? How did they find that oil? They found that unique jug of oil because they were searching for it. Right? They were looking for it. And it was somewhere hidden in the Beis HaMikdash. But why were they looking for that oil? What prompted them to look and search for the oil? What prompted the search was because when they came into the temple and they looked around and they saw the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. They saw the temple lay in ruins. They saw the place was a wreck and everything was contaminated. It was precisely because everything was so ruined and so dark, that's what forced them to look. So they searched, and they searched, and they searched, and so they pulled out this Pach Shemen. So that the jar of oil was always there. But had they not looked for it, they wouldn't have found it. And they wouldn't have looked for it had the place not been destroyed by the Greeks. And that is resembling the spiritual element of where Hanukkah comes from. Where do we get the power of light that it's limitless and that can shine and break away the darkness? Where do we get that power? That power itself comes from the darkness. As the Medrash tells us, that Yavan is called dark. It says that when Avram Avinu had a vision by the Brisbane Apsarim, by the covenant, it says that a great fear and darkness fell upon Avram. And the sages say that Ema represents Babel, the Babylonians. Gadol represented Persia, the Paras. Chashecha, darkness, that's Yavan. Yavan is darkness. Noifeles falls upon him is either Edom or Yishmael. But Choshech is Yavan. Why is Yavan darkness? Because Yavan stands in opposition to the light of the world. Because Yavan were the first ones, the Greeks were the first ones to challenge light, to challenge Torah and mitzvahs. See, Judaism had many challenges. Or holiness was challenged in this word many times. The idolatry was a challenge. But it was a challenge and it was an opposition to God. Purim, there was a threat against who? It was a threat against the Jewish people. So there was a challenge against God, and there was a challenge against the Jewish people. But there was never a challenge against Torah and mitzvahs. Hanukkah was the first time when a nation got up and wanted to extinguish and put out the light of Torah and mitzvahs. Torah and mitzvahs is called the light of the world. This is the Ur, the light that God has given the world to illuminate the world. Yavan stood in opposition. They wanted to put out that light. That's why Yavan is indicated as Choshech, as darkness. And the Yavanim were pretty successful. They managed to affect the Jewish people very deeply. The deepest effect, more than any other nation, to our spiritual souls, to our godliness, was Yavan. And many Jews were assimilating, or close to complete, total assimilation. And there were those who were just scared. They were scared and they couldn't keep the mitzvahs. And there was a threat that it seemed like almost they put out the flame, they put out the light of the Jewish people. But here is the amazing thing. What happens to the Jewish people when you put out their light? Chas v'shalom. What happens when you extinguish the light in a Jew? The Jew isn't destroyed. Because when you put out his light, then the Jew digs deeper into himself. The Jew searches and goes deeper into himself, and he discovers something that is deeper than light, that is stronger than light. He discovers his oil. He discovers his essence. His essence, which is the oil, which is the source from where light comes from. Yavan is darkness. Darkness is the opposing force. It stands against light. And it can put out all light. But there's something deeper than light. And that is oil. And oil can never be destroyed. Oil is indestructible. Oil, the spiritual oil of our neshama can never be destroyed. This represents the essence of a Jew, a connection to God that is absolute and unbreakable and is eternal. and can't be messed with. So that's why when the Jewish people came into the Beis HaMikdash and they saw that the menorah was put out, and not only was the light put out, but even the oil was contaminated. Which means they reached even deeper into the soul, contaminated the very, very core of the people, getting to their oil, and even over there they were able to bring their impurity and unholiness and to defile. But there is one jug of oil. There is one place in the heart, in the inner sanctuary of every single Jew that is uncontaminable. A place that cannot be messed with. A place that cannot be made dirty. Never. And it's that jug of oil that the Jews were forced to get. It was because of such darkness, they had no choice but to dig in to their very core. And they brought out that oil, and that's where that was their uprising against the oven. That was what the Chashmonaim uprising was, an expression of that oil. Their fight that they fought back against the Greek armies was not a fight of light. It didn't come from inspiration. It didn't come from the illumination. Because it wasn't rational. It wasn't something that they were fighting with any understanding. It wasn't a war that they were fighting with reason, where it made sense that it was possible for them, that this was a feasible victory. This was impossible. This war was suicidal. They were outnumbered. They were outgunned. Why were they fighting? They were fighting with their Mesiras Nefesh. This war was a war of Mesiras Nefesh. Why? Because this war was a war of their Pintel Yid. This war was a war of their oil. This war came from their very essence, from a place within them where they said, Judaism cannot come to an end. If it means that we have to give our lives, if it means we have to give everything, so be it. But Judaism cannot stop. This was coming from their oil. They discovered their oil, and that's why when they went into the Beis HaMikdash, they found that one jug of oil. So that one jug of oil, which is the essence of the Jewish soul, which is deeper than light and darkness, a place where light and darkness are the same, because the jug of oil is connected to God's very essence, which transcends light and darkness equally. That oil has the ability and the potency to illuminate even the dark. When we light a flame from that oil, it has no restrictions and it has no boundaries. And that's where we get our strength every year, Hanukkah. Every year on Hanukkah, we get our strength to have a new Hanukkah and a rededication of our own temple, and to rebuild our spiritual lives and our Torah and mitzvahs, and recommit ourselves and completely obliterate the past, as if yesterday and all the darkness of yesterday doesn't matter whatsoever. Today is a new beginning. I'm a Jew from new today. Where is that coming from? It comes because on Hanukkah, we get in touch with our oil. We get in touch with our very inner neshama. And that has endless power. That is stronger than anything. It's stronger than any Yetzahara. It's stronger than any addiction. It's stronger than any kind of pattern and habit that we've gotten used to. It's stronger than everything. Outside opposition, internal opposition, there's nothing that can stand in the way of that oil or of the light that's coming when that oil is ignited. That oil is dynamite, and that oil breaks all barriers. And as we say in the halachas of Hanukkah, until when can you light your menorah? Until when? What is the time of lighting the menorah? What's the limit of lighting? So the menorah can be lit, it says, ad dekali yarigla detarmidoi. Until there's still people in the street, until the Tarmidai people are still walking, as long as they're still out there and they're walking on the streets, until then you can light your menorah. Who are the Tarmidai? Tarmidai were people who were the last lingering people, used to be out in the markets the last. They were the people who sold firewood. So people, you know, came home at night and they would need it for cooking or for keeping their homes warm. And if they ran out of wood, they would still run out into the street to those people who would sell the wood. And they saw, I think they weren't even selling the firewood. See, most people bought firewood already earlier in the day. But sometimes you realize you were lacking little pieces, little twigs to help ignite the fire. So these were the ones who sold the bundles of twigs, the matches, so to speak, of the to keep the fire going. These are the termidai. So it says, being that they're the last ones on the street, how long can you light your menorah? As long as the termidai people are still out in the street. When they're not there anymore, so since the whole point is to publicize the miracle, there's no one to publicize anymore. What is the deeper meaning of this? Hanukkah comes to illuminate and to shine into the darkness. And there are people that are out in the dark. There are people that have lost their way in their lives. And they feel disconnected, cold, they don't know, they're lost. However, there are those that are lost. But then there are the people who they are night prowlers. They are the ones who are on the street at night, representing elements of darkness, forces that belong, they thrive in the darkness. That's why when no one is out in the street anymore, because it's too dark, they're out in the street. It's indicated also in their name. Tarmidoi, if you rearrange the letters, comes from the word, can be rearranged as Moiredes. Moiredes means rebellious ones. The Tarmidoi are the rebellious ones. People that rebel against God, rebel against holiness, rebel against all goodness in this world. And they're the Tarmidoi. The point of the Hanukkah menorah is that the verses that the Gemara is telling us, the Talmud is telling us, is that the menorah is so powerful and so strong that it has the ability to reach even the Moredes, even those elements, those people that are in a state of rebellion against God, rebellion against everything good and everything holy, to warm the souls of those that are outside, or at least to eliminate those that are on the outs, those forces of negativity, forces of unholiness. But the Talmud uses the words rigle de tarmidai, the feet of the tarmidai, the feet of the tarmidai people, because in rebellion there's three kinds of rebellion. There is rebellion of the head, there is the rebellion of the heart, and there is the rebellion of the feet. There are those who rebel because they have intellectual objections. There are certain things that that are causing them to have a difficulty with God, with holiness. They have objections. You see certain things in this world that don't make any sense. You see suffering and all kinds of and you have questions. And as a result of that, that prompts them to rebel against God. So it's a rebellion coming from the mind. It's a rational rebellion. It's coming from their logical. So that's not such a bad rebellion, because it's a rebellion that you can argue. At least there's an argument. At least this, in other words, I'm rebelling because so and so. So then you give a counter argument, and then you can fix that. So it's not a real complete rebellion. Then there's a deeper rebellion. There's an emotional rebellion. There are people who have been scarred in their life. People that have gone through very, very difficult, painful things. And as a result of that, they're upset. They're angry at God. They're angry at what their lives have dealt them. And as a result of that, they rebel. That's a much difficult rebellion. It's a harder rebellion. So the light of, that's the rebellion of the heart, an emotional rebellion. But then there is the rebellion of the feet. The rebellion of the feet is a rebellion, just simple, irrational rebellion. Just simple stubbornness. Those that are rebelling against God just because they want to rebel. No explanation whatsoever. That's just such a thick rebellion. It's something that's standing in opposition against God for no reason at all. That's the ultimate of opposition, the ultimate of darkness. The power of Hanukkah is that it publicized the miracle so far that not only does it reach the Moredes, the person that's out there that is rebelling against God, but even if the rebellion is a foot-like rebellion, even if the rebellion is a plain, simple rebellion without any explanation whatsoever, Hanukkah menorah can permeate and penetrate even that darkness and cause that even the feet of the Tarmidai, The word kiloya in kalya, the New Talmud uses kalya. Kalya has two meanings. It will eliminate, till the people, the termidoya, are not there in the street anymore, according to the word elimination. Kalya also means expiring. Meaning it will bring those that are rebelling against God to a state of expiring with love for Hashem. Hanukkah is so endless, its power and its strength, that even those that are in the greatest opposition and the most standing in even them, Hanukkah will draw in. And the lesson to this is to us twofold. First of all, on Hanukkah, we know that our job is to reach out. And it's not just about illuminating ourselves. We have to realize that God is giving us Hanukkah gelt. Every year He gives us a higher Hanukkah gelt. He gives us great light. And our job is that we should take this light and shine it out into the streets. Our brethren and friends and people that aren't as lucky as us are fortunate. And we need to share the light of Torah and mitzvahs. Share whatever we know and share this with other people. And we sometimes are objecting and saying, well, you know what? I can share it with this person and that person. I can share it with the hungry people. People that are seeking and people that are searching. But how about we have someone who is so hostile? I have a family member, or I have a friend or a colleague or someone who is so in opposition, and he rebels with utter rebellion. So Hanukkah is saying that even if the rebellion, not only a regular rebellion, but even if it's a simple, stubborn rebellion, on these days of Hanukkah, we have the ability to touch the heart of every Jew and illuminate every person. And the same is a lesson to ourselves. Because within ourselves too, we have places, blockages in our soul. We have certain areas within ourselves that are blocked, that are thick, that are not allowing godly light to come through. And there is a rebellion. There are places, and sometimes in our mind rebels. Sometimes there is an emotional blockage. And sometimes even lower than that, there is a plain stubbornness within us that doesn't want to allow God in. Just stubborn, standing with an opposition against Hashem. And the Hanukkah, the lesson over here is that Hanukkah, we have the ability to rededicate ourselves, redevote ourselves, and break through all barriers, even the Tarmidoi, and even the clogging of the leg, even the Tarmidoi of the feet. That is the ultimate Meredes, when total opposition against God, even those elements can be broken through, and Hashem's light can reach us completely. And on Hanukkah, as we all will finish lighting up the little bit of darkness that's left, we all light our menorahs. And on this Hanukkah, we will experience the ultimate redemption, the coming of Mashiach. B'mehira b'yameinu. Yeah.